NATO's Secretary General is in Washington today to meet with President Obama, as the North Atlantic Treaty Organization itself has become an issue on the campaign trail. Here's what Donald Trump said about NATO on ABC's This Week.
I think NATO is obsolete. NATO was done at a time you had the Soviet Union, which was obviously larger, much larger than Russia is today. I'm not saying Russia is not a threat, but we have other threats. We have the threat of terrorism, and NATO doesn't discuss terrorism. NATO's not meant for terrorism. NATO doesn't have the right countries in it for terrorism.
Well, joining us now is retired General Wesley Clark, who was NATO's Supreme Allied Commander and a former presidential candidate himself. He's now CEO of an international consulting firm. General Clark, welcome.
Thank you.
And what do you think of what Donald Trump has said there about NATO?
Well, I think it represents a fundamental misunderstanding of how foreign policy works and what keeps the United States safe in the world. You know, NATO is absolutely vital to the United States. It's not obsolete. It is the foundation for U.S. foreign policy. It ties the United States to Europe. And that's a group of 500 million people that are those who most closely share our values in the whole world. With NATO and our alliance with Europe, we're able to affect diplomacy and work against terrorism and work in favor of the policies that help the United States all over the world. If we threw that linkage out, the United States would be much less effective and much less powerful in the world. That's not to say we shouldn't be taking actions against terrorism. And NATO doesn't deploy its forces necessarily against terrorism, although NATO did deploy its forces in Afghanistan. But NATO exists for our benefit. We need it. This is just part of the education of Donald Trump as he runs for public office. First, he said NATO was ineffective because it didn't prevent the Brussels attacks. Now he's saying it's obsolete because it didn't prevent the Brussels attacks. Listen, NATO is a fundamental underpinning of U.S. national security policy and our whole diplomatic architecture in the world. We need to strengthen it.
But it was designed decades ago. Does it need to be changed in a fundamental way to deal with the threats of today, which are, frankly, terrorism?
What's fundamental about NATO is it's the pledge of one nation to every other, that an attack against one is an attack against all. That's what's fundamental in NATO. That's the most powerful bond that you can create between nations. NATO is the culmination of two horrible world wars in the 20th century. We learned that lesson, so no, we shouldn't change that. Can we do more intelligence sharing within NATO? Can we sharpen up NATO's ability to bring international efforts to bear to deal with the root causes of terrorism or the manifestations of terrorism in certain places in the Middle East? Perhaps, and we should always look at that. But Russia's coming back. So when Mr. Trump says it was designed against the Soviet Union was a nuclear power that threatened Europe. Russia today is a nuclear power threatening its neighbors in Europe. Now, you don't feel this in the United States directly because our news media doesn't focus on it, but if you were in Eastern Europe, you'd find stories about Russian threats on a daily and weekly basis, especially in countries like Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, who are constantly feeling the pressure of Russia trying to claw its way back in. So they desperately need NATO and the protection that NATO provides.
But then shouldn't NATO have done something when Russia invaded Crimea?
Actually, Ukraine is not part of NATO. And so technically, so NATO wasn't going to defend Ukraine. Ukraine's always been in the middle ground, struggling in its national identity. Did it want to come to the West? Did it want to closer alignment with Russia? And so it's been torn ideologically, politically, personally. Many of Ukraine's leaders wanted to be closer to the West, but their business interests were more aligned with Russia, and that's where their history lay. What happened is that when Putin moved into the Crimea, he sent a shock through Ukraine, and Ukrainians begin to realize they didn't want to be associated with Russia, and so he actually cost Russia its close relationship with Ukraine by that action. Ukraine has been much more oriented to the West since 2014.
So should Ukraine be allowed into NATO?
I think it's too early to answer that question. I wouldn't say definitively never, but I would also say that we don't need to do it right now. What Ukraine has to do is work to consolidate its democracy. Putin has many different ways that he can work against Ukraine, and he's doing all of that. The West, through NATO and individually through the EU, is doing what it can to help. But Ukraine is the cockpit of the struggle between East and West right now.
I want to go back to something you said a minute ago, though, about an attack against one is an attack against all, one of the big principles of NATO. So what should NATO's response be to the attack against France, to the attack against Belgium, to the attacks that have happened in Turkey, which is also part of NATO?
Right. Well, when 9/11 happened, actually, NATO wanted to declare what's called Article 5 to support the United States. And all these NATO nations expressed solidarity to the United States. We decided not to invoke Article 5 in NATO, and we requested them not to do it, and they worked individually with us because the primary response to terrorism has been through national channels. In other words, it's our intelligence services working with the German service, the French service, the Belgian service. We don't have a NATO intelligence service because NATO intelligence is fundamentally national intelligence. So I'm sure that's what's happened behind the scenes that you may not have seen and that didn't necessarily go through NATO was lots of information sharing was pushed toward the Belgians, just as it was to France afterwards. And the United States and our other allies worked individually and cooperatively to bring to bear all of the information that could possibly be relevant and provide it through the right channels to the Belgian authorities in this case.
But you're talking about intelligence sharing. What about a military response?
Well, now, would you want U.S. military forces to charge through the suburbs in Belgium?
Well, I'm asking really more about Syria. Should they go to Syria?
Well, that's a foreign policy question that individual nations have to decide. So there are no NATO forces exclusive of the forces that belong to the United States, Germany, Britain, and France. So they have to decide individually that this is the right thing to do. Now, I'm not one of those who believes that we should be putting Western ground forces into Syria. Were we to do so, I think NATO could be an appropriate channel of command and control to do that. But I don't think that's the right response because what's happened in Syria is that when Bashar Assad started losing authority and the domestic opposition rose up, various factions emerged inside Syria that were resisting Bashar Assad, and they received arms and equipment from Qatar, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and some other countries, including limited support from the United States, all in an effort to change the government in Syria. Over a long period of time, ISIS emerged, and ISIS was there as a more cohesive force to fight against Iranian domination and Iranian support for Bashar Assad. So what's happening in Syria is not just a fight against terrorism. It's a geostrategic struggle to define the future of the Middle East. And what we learned in Iraq is that if you put Western armies in there, they may be able to defeat enemy forces, but they can't fundamentally change cultures and societies and economies and create new forms of governance. It doesn't work that easily, especially in that region. So before we could put NATO forces in there, we've got to do the fundamentals, which is get an agreement among the major actors in the region as to what they want to see as the political outcome of war. Until then, we can work, as we're working, cost-effectively and efficiently against ISIS with special ops, with bombing, and so forth. But putting U.S. troops in for a military objective that doesn't have a political objective behind it is a recipe for failure, just as it was in Iraq.
General Wesley Clark, the former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. He's now at the Burkle Center for International Relations at UCLA. We will continue our conversation tomorrow. I'll ask about President Obama's red line in Syria and the consequences of inaction there.